go. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom engineering and producing the show.
No, Tom asleep at the wheel.
Well, we had a little dead air. What's 10 seconds out of the hour? But no, it's great to have Tom back on the other side of the glass in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. Hello, everybody. It's Friday, October 22nd, 2021. Our radio station is 1030, Tucson's trusted source for news talk. The call letters are KVOI, like The Voice. And we'll wrap up year 11 here in December, start year 12 in January. Being on the radio after 22 years on TV hosting Arizona Illustrated, so it's a long time in the community. And still going strong, I hope. Worldwide live listening of our program, all our podcasts of the show at buckmastershow.com, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Our Friday, we do a little media shout out to people who have been especially kind to us over the years, TucsonSentinel.com. Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, the Tucson Local Media Group, and its portfolio of publications includes Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our guest reporter with me in studio is the 2021 Arizona Newspaper Association Journalist of the Year, Metro columnist for the Arizona Daily Star, Tim Stellar. Tim, congratulations.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
And that was for your border reporting, I believe, part of that Pulliam Fellowship, correct?
Yeah, most of what I submitted for that award was from that fellowship project. It was all about the selling of the border. How do I put it?
Political manipulation of a narrative.
Public opinion.
Public opinion and narrative on the border. All right.
I can't believe I forgot.
Well,
it's been a while now.
I'm the wordsmith here on the radio, but not in print. Okay.
All right.
Our Friday Focus interview is with Pima County Health Director, Dr. Terry Cullen. Dr. Cullen returned to Tucson 16 months ago after a distinguished career. My goodness, this woman's resume is amazing. Public health physician, including retiring as a public health service officer from the federal government with the rank of Rear Admiral and Assistant U.S. Surgeon General. She's a graduate of the University of Arizona College of Medicine and a clinical associate professor at the medical college. Dr. Cullen, how are you today?
I'm great. You always make me feel awesome. Thank you.
Well, no, you do. You've got a terrific resume, and we're very lucky to have you after that very distinguished career in Washington. I want to begin with these numbers. I follow them like many people do, these caseload numbers. Dr. Cullen, it looks like there's still a lot of disease in this community, a lot of COVID.
There still is a lot of COVID. If you look at what we call our epicurves, which are how we rank the cases by week, called Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report, a Sunday to Saturday report, we do have a lot of COVID. We don't have as much as we had in December, January, and February, when you'll recall we had a really high peak. But we're developing what we call a rectangle. So instead of going up and down like an elliptical, instead we went up not quite as far as then, and we're just leveling off at between 140 and 180 cases per 100,000 per week, way too high.
Why is this thing not going away in our community, where other communities have peaked and seem to be on that downward slope? We seem to be at this plateau. What's your take?
This is such a great question, and I think it's multifactorial. Some of it is that our vaccine rates, while we're creeping up, we're like an inchworm every day. We go up just a little bit. We're not seeing a tremendous increase right now. Our overall vaccination rate in the county for those 12 and over, which is, you know, we can't vaccinate little ones yet, is about 68%. What we know is to get what was previously called herd immunity or community immunity. We probably need to be around 90, high 80s, 90. I realize that's a number that we didn't start with in the pandemic, but it's what we think we need to be at now. And we have a lot of transmission. Obviously, that's where we're getting these cases, right? So that it's still, COVID is primarily a disease of the unvaccinated, but we do have some breakthrough. It's not a huge number, and I want to reassure people that have been vaccinated that if they get COVID, the odds of being hospitalized or having any significant impact are very, very minimal. But we still have a significant number of people that are unvaccinated in the community.
And you did, and Tim, I'll give it to you in 1 second, but I just wanted to quickly follow up on those breakthrough cases. As I recall, when you were with us a couple of months ago, you were able to narrow it down. I want to say one in,
Are you saying how many cases per vaccinated people?
Yeah.
Do you know that rate? How many breakthrough cases there are into the number of vaccinated people?
So we look at that rate pretty regularly. I don't have it at the tip of my finger, but we know it's been, and this may be what, it changes, right? So it's increasing a little. The more people that get vaccinated, the more breakthrough cases we appear to be reporting. But that number is about 0.5%.
Mm.
So less than 1% of people that are getting vaccinated end up infected. And that is a case number. It doesn't mean that they've been hospitalized. But remember that what predicts all of this, or what is a part of this, is the number of people that get tested. So is that accurate? I think it's probably pretty accurate. But if you're vaccinated and you get like a sniffle, do you go get tested? Probably you don't.
So perhaps it's really a number in the single digits, under 5% or so. I don't know. I'm just throwing out numbers here. But it probably is higher than that 0.5%, but maybe not in a significant degree.
Yeah, that's what we think, because we're not seeing a tremendous increase in people that are getting admitted to the hospital that have been vaccinated. So once again, the issue is we should expect that there'll be breakthrough, just like there is with flu. You know, people get flu vaccines and they get the flu. The goal here is to keep people from having significant morbidity or mortality. Obviously, our real goal is to stop the disease. But if you're an individual who happens to get COVID and have been fully vaccinated, the odds are tremendously in your favor that you will not get seriously ill.
Dr. Cullen, I watched your presentation to the City Council from earlier this week, and I noticed, first of all, that rectangular curve that you referred to, that it really doesn't even curve. I mean, you talked about it as if it were bad news, but in a way, could it not be viewed as good news in the sense that there is no peaking happening, that we're maybe avoiding the peak as a result of vaccination or something like that?
Yeah, you know, Tim, that's a great way to think about it. I also think it means people are still testing, right? So what we're seeing when we look at other counties in Arizona, and that number's going down, remember that number has to be interpreted based on the number of tests that are being done. So if your tests go down, you're not going to find the disease. You know, it looks like COVID goes away. But I would agree with you. I think the concern, however, for me as a public health person is that I really would like to get that number less than 100. Remember, we're considered in high transmission if we get less than 100 cases per 100,000, which would be less than on average 1,000 cases per week in the county. We would be considered to be in substantial transmission. The only reason I think that is that the lower that case rate can get, the least likely we are to infect someone who's not vaccinated and or is immunocompromised.
I'm sorry, just to clarify that. So substantial spread is under 100 cases per 100,000, and high is above 100 cases per 100,000. And we're at 140, so we're still in high. 140 plus.
Yeah, I would say 140 plus, because those days can go up and down. And you may have seen earlier this week on, I think it was Monday, there was over 600 cases reported. That was because the state epi system, the software was down for a couple days. So all of a sudden they just dumped everything out, and it looked like we had a tremendous large COVID party the day before, which wasn't what happened.
They had over 6,000. I think they, on that dump, they had 6,000 to 7,000 statewide cases.
Yeah, it would have been concerning if you didn't know what that was,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, what happened 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Hey, Dr. Cullen, another thing I noticed in your presentation is you referred to, I think, several census tracts. You were looking at the vaccination rate by census tract, and you said there were several that were in the 40% range of people who had been vaccinated in those census tracts. That really took me by surprise. As I looked at the map that you were showing, it looked to me to be mostly on the south and west sides, and basically it seemed to correlate with lower income areas. So could you tell me, is that the case? And also, wow, how can it be that low?
Well, I would remind you, so those are great questions. And actually, I just looked at this data before I came on here. I must have been a little prescient today. We update our vaccine dashboard once a week and on Fridays. So if people go to Pima County Vaccine COVID Dashboard, they can all look at it. I would remind people that we had some census tracts where we were in the teens, 15, 20, 21, 25. Those are where we did a huge push. And Tim, you are right. Overall, if you were aggregating them, while some may be off on their own, the vast majority are between the I-10, I-19 South area, right in there, and the rural. So it looks like it's west. We have some similar numbers going up in the northwest part of the county, in the more rural areas up there. What's contributing to that? I don't think it's all vaccine hesitancy, and it's not all people not wanting to get the vaccine. And like I said at the council meeting, I think a lot of this is wage earners, people that are hourly employees that either don't get time off and or have no sick leave and are real concerned about side effects. The reason why I think that is that we can nudge that a little. So we've gone from 20 to 40 to 41%, 42%, and we just keep working closely with those communities. There was a time where I remember the big pods where we thought, oh, we need 1,500 people a day, you know, polish our nails, saying, isn't that amazing? I will tell you right now, if we do a vaccine clinic and we get 8 to 10 people, we're impressed. You guys may know we just kicked off some stuff. We just kicked off this week in some barber shops, Vax and Fades. And the first day at one of the barbershops, we did 9 vaccines. I was so happy.
Wow.
Because that was 9 people we hadn't vaccinated before. So right now, if we can get high single digits, we're pretty happy.
We're going to take the break here in a minute, but I do want to follow up on that. The adult population, the senior population, let's call it over 65, it's a pretty impressive Pima County vaccination rate, isn't it, Dr. Cullen?
Yeah, 96.7% from this morning are one shot, and almost 88% double, you know, are fully immunized. So
That's a very interesting. I want to dig a little deeper into that, because these are these people that really haven't, obviously they haven't bought in to the conspiracy theories and this other anti-vax stuff.
I think some of it, if you'll recall early on, is the mortality was so great in the older population. Now, when we say older there, that's really looking at 75 and 80, you know, not just anybody that's considered 65 and over. But I think everybody knows somebody who either had significant morbidity or mortality. So I think there's that sense of this is a little more real.
And Bill, I know I read about this somewhere recently. I think it was a New York Times op-ed. It is interesting because those older voters tend to be more conservative politically.
Right.
Be more likely to be Trump voters, and yet they've gotten vaccinated at a high rate. So it's clearly not just that political factor that's keeping people from getting vaccinated.
All right, Dr. Cullen, stay with us. We're going to take a break right here. Dr. Terry Cullen is with us, Pima County Health Director. But right now, Tim Steller, who is with me in studio, the award-winning Tim Steller. Well, Tim, what do you feel like now when we start talking about Mona's? What kind of mood are you in for some of the Mona's bakery goods? What would you go for right now?
Oh, I'd go for a Kringle with my tea.
You would
easy,
go.
Easy call, yeah.
Okay, easy call. It is a difficult call for many people that walk in because they look at the bakery case and they say, oh my goodness, what would I go with? I would go right now with the chocolate croissant. But if Tom's giving a thumbs up as well, but some might want the Danish Kringle cut up into a beautiful piece, a couple of pieces. They're sold that way, or you can buy the whole Kringle or the Danish coffee cake, which is a cousin of the Kringle. All right, open right now for lunch at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Of course, they're open at 6:30 for breakfast, and boy, do they excel when it comes to breakfast. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is the website. Tim Steller sticks around, as does Dr. Terry Cullen, and of course, I'll stick around. We'll be back with you right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
All righty, everybody. Buckmaster back with you with Dr. Terry Cullen, who is our Pima County Health Director. Tim Steller is with me in studio. And Dr. Cullen, I got the Moderna shots. I'm in the Moderna family in that program. So, of course, I'm wondering, and I think a lot of our listeners who are Moderna people are wondering, when can we get the booster if we're of a certain age, of course?
Well, you know they were approved yesterday
yes.
by the CDC director. If you're of a certain age, if you're 18 and over and you live or work in a high-risk setting, a long-term care setting, have underlying medical conditions, and you're more than 4 weeks out, you can get your booster. The Pima County Health Department clinics and our facility at the public health office itself at what we call the Abrams Building by Keno will have those available starting Monday. I'm pretty sure that we're sending out communication about that right now. My guess is that CVS, Walgreens, other pharmacies have them available today.
But really? Today?
I'm not sure. Hmm. Yeah, they may. It's all depending upon what we call a standing order. So people have to look at the information that FDA has set out, make sure that they have an order from a physician or a prescribing physician to have them go into place, and then they can move forward.
Would your clinics in Pima County, will those be walk-in or will you need an appointment, Dr. Mm-hmm. Cullen?
You know, our walk-in is at Abrams. We do encourage everyone to get an appointment if they can, but all our three Pima County Health Department clinics, as well as our facility at Abrams, all facilitate walk-ins.
Here's Tim Steller of the Star.
What about the vaccines for the children under 12? What's the status of that now?
Yeah, this is such a great question, Tim. Everybody keeps asking me. I wish I had my crystal ball. We do anticipate that we're going to get approval fairly quickly for that. People are talking about the first week in November, so that would be about 10 days from now. They do have to go through FDA. You maybe saw what Pfizer revealed today, that there's high efficacy in terms of kids not getting ill with COVID if they get the vaccination. We do anticipate that there will be approval for both Pfizer and Moderna pretty quickly. Exactly when, I'm not sure. However, what I would want to reassure the listeners is that we are working closely with the schools and the pediatric offices. The Arizona Academy of Pediatricians is working with the pediatricians to make sure that they are able. We did do what we call a pre-order. So that is where we pre-order with the state vaccines to get into the county prior to approval. I know it seems a little odd, but it's what we did last fall, too, in December. So just yesterday, on the 20th, so 2 days ago, we pre-ordered 10,000 shots to come in. Between the 5 and 11-year-old, the census would indicate there's about 88,000 kids. The Kaiser Family Foundation, which does a lot of really good evaluation work, and we rely on it a lot, indicates that their feedback is a third of parents, so a third of kids will seek early immunization, meaning as soon as there's been approval, they'll take their kids. The estimate then is that within 4 to 6 weeks after that, about 50 to 60% total will seek immunization, so basically another 30%. So we're planning on that. So what that would mean is if it's a third and you can round to 90,000, that means we would hope that we'd be able to give 30,000 immunizations within the first couple weeks. And like I stated, we'll have 10,000 of those shots into the community hopefully by next week. But they can't go out until the CDC says they can.
Getting back to Moderna, I was one of those that had a very robust reaction to the second shot. And I'm just wondering, the booster is half the dose, I understand, of the second shot. Mm-hmm. Would that mean that the reactions would typically be more like the first shot, which most people didn't report much of a side effect from the first Moderna?
I don't think we can assume that.
Okay.
And the reason is because what we're doing with each shot is boosting you, and we want your antibody response to be greater. So I would think based on what your second shot did is what you're going to see with the third shot. And I realize that the dose is less, right? So you would think from a decreased dose, maybe the reaction will be less. But I don't want to falsely reassure people. I think we're going to have to see what happens in large populations.
All right. Let's go to caller and listener. Robert has a question about city vaccine mandates. Robert, go ahead.
Hi, Bill. You should know that I'm totally behind the vaccine. I've got mine. I think that anybody who refuses to get it without a good reason is just a little baby about it. Pregnant women, I can understand. That said, why Pima County looks like a chump to Maricopa County on a daily basis, because we are. So how could the city council be taking on the governor of the state about this mandate and making us look even like a bigger batch of babies?
Not sure quite what he means.
I think he's, because if he's referring to number of caseloads, of course, Maricopa County's got a heck of a lot more caseloads than Pima County. As far as a chump, because we are going against the state, going against the governor's mandate. Tim, is that how you would indicate that? That makes us look weird?
I don't
weird?
See it that way.
How do you, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, the city's... Maybe it's the case that the county isn't challenging the governor, whereas the city is, and that makes the county seem weak in comparison. Anyway.
Robert, are you still there?
Yeah. When I say Maricopa County, I mean that's where the governor is.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And we're always in these little tiny fights.
Okay.
All they do is fight in the city council with a bunch of ridiculous issues, when I don't have to explain how many other huge problems we have that they're not getting solved.
Okay. All right. Dr. Cullen, do you want to add to this, or would you just rather keep it with Tim and I interpreting this? Go ahead.
Yeah, I really think it's elected officials that where this dialogue is occurring. I would re-echo my belief that the more people we get vaccinated, the safer we'll be as a community. But the decision about mandates is not within my purview.
Can I ask you, though, about the difference? I mean, is there any... How should we view the COVID-19 vaccine differently from pre-existing vaccine regimens like DTaP, MMR, and all that, polio? I mean, is it different in some organic way?
Tim, this is a great question. It's obviously not different in some organic way. I think the difference is that this is new. And so some of the hesitation, I think, is because unlike knowing that you need to get a tetanus shot, if you cut yourself, you usually go to the ER or your doc and go get a tetanus shot, right? There's not like a big thing in your head, do I need this tetanus shot or not? No, you know that it protects, right? You know that it protects you. And for people that are older and remember polio or know somebody that might have post-polio syndrome right now, there's this reality right there living with them. So I think some of it is just time that at some point people will recognize that, because I do believe this is going to happen like we're seeing in California, that it will just become part of the immunization requirement prior to going to school. And obviously there will continue to be medical and religious exemptions on some level, but I think it's because it's new. And, to just recognize that it's not only new, it's really scary, right? We've been through kind of a hellacious past 2 years.
I don't know if you can explain this given your background. I mean, you probably can given your background in public health. Let me rephrase.
Let's hope so.
I was on the way over here to the station. It kind of struck me like a bolt of lightning. Why are there religious exemptions for vaccination requirements at places of work, which of course are voluntary decisions? In other words, I go to work for my newspaper. That's my choice. If they want to require me to take a vaccine, why would there be an opportunity for me to claim a religious exemption to that?
No, you know, it's good you preface this by saying maybe I couldn't answer that.
I'm gonna
hide behind that. I don't know how ubiquitous religious exemptions are at workplaces for other vaccines. So I can't answer that question.
Well, I'm just going to go ahead and say I'm starting to think of this. I mean, I know there's, for example, Jehovah's Witnesses have a longstanding religious belief against vaccinations. But overall, I'm going to go ahead and say I think most of this is bogus. I think that there is a concern related to the aborted fetal tissue.
Yeah.
Now, tell me, does that exist in any of the any of the vaccines that we're talking about?
You know, I would have to get back to you. I know LA County did this very detailed response to that about the use of aborted fetal cells. And I got to say, I don't remember it right now, the answer to it.
I want to switch gears here and talk about new variants to the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And they do seem to be keep emerging. There's a new one, a new Delta descendant, mm-hmm. that is causing concern in the United Kingdom. And United Kingdom has been somewhat of a bellwether for COVID cases, and the Delta came out of there very strong. How worried should we be about all of this?
This is once again a great question, and yeah. I got asked it the other day, and then just this morning, actually, I saw some new articles about it. It's not considered a variant of interest yet. You know, what happens is when they detect a variant, then we look at that and we decide what we're going to see with that. And in this case, the CDC has not declared it a variant of interest yet. It goes variant of interest and variant of concern. However, I would say for all of us, what we should recognize is that there will continue to be variants. And at some point, some of those variants will become variants of concern. It becomes a variant of concern when we are concerned, using that word again, in terms of the impact it will have in terms of the disease process. But the fact that there's another variant is predictable.
You know, I was just seeing some of these numbers on total vaccination people. And if you take the world's population and look at the folks who have gotten at least one shot, it is staggering how low the percentage is of the world's population that have actually had a COVID shot.
Yes, and there are certain countries where we're really worried, right? You know, there's issues in Haiti. Haiti's vaccination rates are low. I would say, though, for us, our neighbors to the south, Mexico has done an amazing job. Mexico City itself is reporting vaccination rates of those eligible, right, of 85%, and we're seeing similar high numbers, quite not that high, but high, 80, 70% in Sonora, Mexico. So it does seem to be regional. Parts of Western Africa are obviously lower than some of the other areas. So, and it is a concern, right? Because all of us want to get back to where we were, and many people from our community love to travel internationally. And so the quicker we can get most of the world vaccinated, the better off we'll be.
Tim, do you have some final thoughts here before we wrap this up?
Yeah, well, I also wonder, maybe you have seen this. It appears to me from my experience that there's more of a collective mentality in Mexico, that is like a collective duty to one another to get. Is that something that you all have seen?
It's so funny you say that. I actually have seen that. And I would say it's not just Mexico. There's other places like Japan. You know, I did a lot of global work for years, and I worked with the Japanese government a little. And I remember once I said, how do you guys get all this data? And the person looked at me like askance, saying, well, we take care of each other. That's mm-hmm. our goal, right? So I think that there is a collective acceptance and this collective understanding of this, what we previously talked about, this need for community high levels of immunity. But I would say, you know, we live in Pima County. Pima County is pretty cool. I think overall our county shares that kind of goals for our community.
I would also put Canada in that category of the collective.
Yes.
So Pima County is basically a combination of Japan and Canada.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll let you guys figure it out.
Okay, let's quickly, because Jim called us here at the last minute, listener. Jim, we're going to put you on the air here, but I'm basically out of time. Go ahead. You're with Dr. Cullen.
Hi, Dr. Cullen. I'm just calling to ask if, tell me how people that have already recovered from COVID and have natural immunity, how does that compare to the immunity that you get from vaccinations? Can you cover that for a second? Thank you.
Yeah, I can cover this for a second, because what I'm going to tell you will probably not be what you want to hear, which is we don't know yet. What we know is people that have had serious illness, have been in the ICU, ventilated, probably have significant amount of an antibody response that they may be okay. We don't know when that response will wane, which is why we still recommend people get vaccinated. People that had a positive test and did not get ill, you know, maybe had a little cold, a sniffle for 24 hours and have some antibody response. We don't know what the level, and I would say what we need is a number that is needed for protection. I actually, just before I got on this morning, I read another article on this, so we don't know yet.
And I'm glad Jim brought it up. It's a good question. Dr. Cullen, thank you very much for being with us. Good information as usual.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. It's great to be on your show.
Thank you very much. Dr. Terry Cullen, the Pima County Health Director, Tim Steller, and myself stick around for some comments right after this on the Buckmaster Show.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Our Friday Focus interview today, Dr. Teresa Cullen. Thank you, Dr. Cullen, for coming on the program today. Some good information. Tim Steller is here, award-winning columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. And really, that is quite an award from the Arizona Newspapers Association. Is it Newspapers or Newspaper Association?
I think it's Newspaper.
Okay, anyway. Newspaper Association gave you a nice award that said on the award, Tim Steller, Arizona Journalist of the Year. So that's cool. Anyway.
I was telling my wife, it'll be good on resumes and in my obituary. That's about it. But it's still nice.
I know that one of my Hall of Fame awards, my cat, Prissy, loves to just kind of get behind it and rub her nose and mouth against
that gotta
it.
Be good so, for something. So it, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Right. Okay, Tim. Another murder in the city of Tucson. Homicide rate is, I believe, are we at a record?
I think based on what various reports are saying, K-Gun said when we had 79 killings yesterday, that tied the record in Tucson. And then I'm reading that there was another one last night. It's really it's alarming, and one of the things that's particularly worrisome is that it's not like there's some group of warring gangs or something where you can try to arrest them all or come to a peace pact or something. It's just like a bunch of fights and little explosions of hostility that turn into homicide.
Anger level on steroids. And we had a couple of really bad road rage incidents this week. And one of them turned into be a murder.
Yes, that was, they seem to arrest these people as soon as it happens. I mean, that arrest was the next day, I believe. And yet the arrest doesn't deter the next person.
But you're saying it's not like gangland Chicago in 1930 or something.
Or just street gangs or anything like that. You know, there's not, some of it is, but that doesn't explain the record, you know. I mean, to be fair, it is happening in cities around the country. I was just in Minneapolis this week, which has a significantly smaller city population than Tucson does, and they have about the same number of murders that we do. Also, I think a record or close to it.
By the way, that would be a trivia question. Which is a larger city? Minneapolis. Now, if you take the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Yeah, you'd have to do.
But you're saying the city of Minneapolis is a considerably smaller population than the city of Tucson.
Correct. It has about 100,000 less people than Tucson. Well, so it's in the 450 range or something.
Anyway, sorry to interrupt you.
No,
go
no
ahead.
Problem. So what I was saying is that while Tucson's trend does reflect a national trend in a lot of cities, that's kind of cold comfort for one thing. And on the other hand, also it's a bit disturbing when I've reviewed the numbers. It seems to be pretty stable outside the city. So it appears to be a dynamic within the city mostly. There's not a huge surge of murders in the unincorporated county or in the outlying suburbs or what have you. So, people use all kinds, you point to all kinds of factors, and it's not clear which one or ones are the correct ones. I mean, there's the whole police dynamic after George Floyd, a lot of police leaving their jobs, and then there's economic stress, family stress, personal stress, drug, you know, abuse, economic inequality, you know, just a kind of a sense of I don't know. Not being part of the, you know, being angry and not being part of the.
Yeah, a lot of anger out there. So we've got a police department that is thin in the ranks. They could get a lot thinner because of the vaccine. I don't know about a lot, but they could lose some members over this the vaccine mandate. We may have a new chief, probably will have a new chief. The Chief Magnus went before a congressional hearing and seemed to fly through it. So without any problem.
Yeah, it was funny. I watched those. You know, I don't watch those hearings very often. And and I, you know, it's obvious why when you watch them. There's just so much bogus stuff that goes on. But you can kind of detect when somebody's somebody's really gunning for a nominee and trying to stop him.
And they weren't doing that.
Yeah, they just, I mean, they pushed him on some things. And I thought legitimately so. You know, they asked him to define Title 8, Section 1325, which is the law, the federal law that prevents prohibits people from crossing between ports of entry, among other things. And he said, well, you know, I haven't familiarized myself with the laws. If I am confirmed, I will do so. Boy, I mean, I was surprised. You know, that was Senator Young of Indiana who asked about that, and he was kind of taken aback. But I was surprised that that kind of stuff seems to be kind of accepted. Like, you can make yourself as bland and even uninformed as possible.
And that it makes you very attractive.
Yeah, it does, because you're inoffensive. Now, I'm not even convinced he doesn't know about that stuff, because he knows a lot.
Yeah.
But I think there's a strategy of just, like you say, being bland and inoffensive.
All right. That's going to wrap it up for Tim Steller, but we've got Weekend Watch with Matt Russell coming up. And Tim, again, congratulations on your big award. And in the paper Sunday, you're working something on COVID-related.
Yeah, related to these vaccine mandates. It's really, really an interesting, thorny issue.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. We'll see how all that comes out in the Arizona Daily Star on Sunday. Tim, have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
All right. Take a break right here. Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, Matt Russell on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, is next.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. And that theme signals Weekend Watch with Matt Russell, presented by our friends over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Oh my, look at this forecast for the weekend over in Silver. High 70, low mid 40s. Can't beat it. Great weekend getaway. Hop in the car, truck, take the 3-hour drive, and you will not regret it. 3 hours east of Tucson, approximately, to a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. Start your planning now by going to southwestnewmexico.org. The longtime host of Weekend Watch is an award-winning Tucson publicist and Inside Tucson Business / Tucson Weekly food and beverage columnist. Here he is, Matt Russell. Hey, Matt.
Hey, hey. I'm feeling better now that I hear that Weekend Watch soundtrack that gets things shaking and stirring, telling me that it's the weekend.
You are feeling your oats today, my friend, and I think you're about ready to get into a little mezcal tasting.
Absolutely. You know, a great event is on tap tonight for those like me who love mezcal, which, of course, is tequila's slightly smokier sister. There's a mezcal tasting tonight at 6 o'clock at the Tucson Hotel on South Freeway near A Mountain. Now, this is evening of spirituous sipping. We'll also include samples of chapulines. Now, chapulines are traditional snacks in Oaxaca that are actually, brace yourself, Bill, toasted grasshoppers.
Excuse me.
Yes. Oh. You can also participate in a painting workshop. Your tickets to the event will run you $30, which include your own alebrije to paint the mezcal tasting and those gastronomic grasshoppers to help draw those smoky flavors out of the agave. Hop over to the Tucson tonight.
I'm always in the mood for something crunchy as an appetizer, so maybe that'll do it. And I'm also always in the mood for a burger, a good burger, my friend.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to report the rhythm of new restaurant openings continues this week, with the doors swinging wide open downtown at Tucson's newest burger joint. It's called Little Love Burger, and one look at the menu suggests there's a lot of love, not just a little. They're located on Congress near the Rialto Theater, and this place has an impressive lineup of specialty burgers and sandwiches, loaded hot dogs, as well as some breakfast sandwiches to let the love flow in the morning hours. And throw some burritos and milkshakes and craft brews and a few plant-based items, and you have all the makings for what I think is going to be a real downtown hotspot. Little Love Burger is loaded and open for business.
And for those that want a good pizza?
Yeah, you know, ever since 1912 Brewing Company opened several years ago over on North Forbes Boulevard, customers have always enjoyed cuisine from local food trucks to pair with these beers. Now, while the food truck convoy will certainly continue, the brewery just announced the opening of its very own on-site pizza kitchen. And what goes better with a pint than a pizza? They've got four signature 1912 pies that they've rolled out. There's a cheese, a pepperoni, Italian veggie, and meat lovers, with some starters and salads available as well. The pizzas are available on weekdays from 4 to 8, Saturdays from 1 to 8, and Sundays from 1 to 5. Fresh hot pizzas and some frosty cold brews under the same roof.
Hey,
1912 Brewing Company.
Mezcal, burgers, pizza, you covered it all today. Thank you, Matt.
Cheers, Bill.
All right, always a pleasure having Matt Russell with our Weekend Watch. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music composed by our German friend, Christophan. Thanks to longtime assistant Rosemary Brandt, making sure all the podcasts are up and posted in a timely manner on behalf of everybody at KVOI, including longtime engineer producer Tom Fairbanks, the entire team at Bustos Media. Have a great weekend.